This is 1A. I'm Sasha Ann Simons in Maryland. The streets and social media feeds of America have been flooded with statements of support for those fighting police brutality against Black people. Big business is no exception. Companies including Amazon, Walmart, Sephora, Netflix, even the NFL, they've publicly declared that Black lives matter. Google took it one step further. Hey, Google Assistant, tell me, do all lives matter?
Saying Black lives matter doesn't mean that all lives don't. It means Black lives are at risk in ways others are not.
What's behind corporate America's sudden condemnation of police violence? Should consumers buy it? Or is it nothing more than good PR? But joining us now from New York City is Terry Nguyen. She's a reporter for The Goods at Vox, and she covers consumer culture. Welcome to 1A, Terry.
Thanks for having me.
With us from San Clemente, California, is Mirza Baradaran. She's a professor of corporate law at the University of California, Irvine, and the author of The Color of Money, Black Banks and the Racial Wealth Gap. Hi, Professor Baradaran.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Also here is Joa Spearman, the founder and CEO of the Austin tech company Localer. Hello, Joa.
Hi, thanks so much for having me as well.
Of course. Terry, let's start with you. Tell us, so we can get up to speed here, what statements of solidarity have we seen from businesses in the last week? Because there were quite a few. And tell us how people reacted to them.
Yeah, ever since last weekend, a lot of brands, from big, well-known brands like Facebook, Intel, Apple, to kind of specific beauty brands like Glossier, Peloton, have released a variety of statements. And to be honest, they've kind of seen a variety of responses from people online. Most of these posts have been either, I think, from the start of last weekend to kind of around Tuesday. There was Blackout Tuesday, where a lot of brands did take the opportunity to post kind of a black square in solidarity with the Black Lives Matter movement. Consumers, for the most part, have praised these companies for speaking out about issues, specifically during this very tumultuous period in time. But a lot have kind of called out companies that have used broad language, very vague statements that don't specifically either condemn racism or explicitly state that Black Lives Matter. So I think companies like Glossier and Peloton, they were not tiptoeing around racism, openly announcing their support for the movement. And for those, I think consumers have been the most open to their responses and statements.
Mm-hmm. Some of these statements, they've also misfired, right? Like, tell us what happened with CrossFit and their CEO, because he apologized yesterday, it was, for a tweet.
Yes, the whole incident around CrossFit is really shocking, because a lot of athletes with the brand, and even I think affiliate gyms, are really condemning or kind of moving away from the brand, because the CEO posted something on Twitter that kind of sought to invalidate Black Lives Matter. And while he tiptoed and went back and said that that wasn't what he necessarily meant, that it was not meant to be a racist statement, it seemed to a lot of people that the damage had already been done, and where the CEO stood was enough for them to distance themselves from the company.
Hmm. What do you think, Professor Baradaran? You know, what role does the business world have in creating the inequality that exists? And also tell us why it's important for them to acknowledge the role that they have.
Yeah, so that's a great question. And I think one of the most salient images of this sort of corporate action was, Jamie Dimon kneeling in front of Chase Manhattan or Chase Bank. And you know, you don't actually have to go back as far as slavery to see what Chase has done, right? So you go back to the subprime crisis and look at where the areas that were targeted with these loans that lost, you know, Black communities lost 53% of their wealth during the subprime crisis. And a lot of these banks, when they got the bailout, were supposed to modify these mortgages, which is to save the homeowners. And what they did instead is foreclose on the homes. And so, you know, my response to that was, why don't you get up off your knees, go back inside, and give people back their homes? So stop kneeling and doing this sort of, you know, imaging, and go and actually do the real stuff. And it actually, it's not, you don't even have to have been implicated in the actual slave trade to be benefiting from some of these things. And not all of the firms, but certainly the largest ones. I mean, Nike's an example, using Colin Kaepernick as a great symbol, but also has done a lot of exploitation and has been called out for it. And so those practices need to change, though it is a positive sign that these companies are gauging the market and seeing that it is to their benefit, their market benefit, to side with Black Lives Matter. And so that, I think, can be seen as progress, but we really have to hold them accountable if we're going to see real change.
Professor, how has the corporate America that we know, how have they actually benefited from structural racism and inequality?
Yeah, I mean, you look at practically every industry over the last 30 or 40, 50 years has been completely monopolized. And so a lot of communities, especially Black and brown communities, urban, but also rural, have lost banks. I mean, 95% of bank closings over the last 10 years have been in LMI, lower middle income communities, right? These were decisions made by banks to search for more profitable markets. So what this means is, you know, last week in New York City, hundreds of people in line for 3 hours to get an unemployment check from the one bank that wasn't giving fees, overdraft fees for these customers. So that's the real problem. And these companies are gaining profits by excluding a certain customer base. And you can go down the line. I mean, the smaller companies, like, you know, whatever, I don't care exactly what Peloton does for this, but you know, the way they hire, the way that they put their factories in a lot of these neighborhoods that end up having these externalities environmentally and job-wise, their warehouses, their wages, all of that stuff has contributed to creating this massive racial wealth gap. And not only that, but actual, you know, putting their employees' lives in danger. And so it has been a very rapid sort of conglomeration of this sector.
Joey, can you weigh in?
Yeah, you know, I would very much amplify much of what Marissa said and say, you know, even something as recent as Citizens United, you know, this landmark Supreme Court case where you see, you know, the American Legislative Council, ALEC, which was supported by companies then such as Walmart, AT&T, these big conglomerates, these big corporations that were supporting this organization. And this is the same organization that fought and ensured that laws like Florida Stand Your Ground law, that obviously was used in the Trayvon Martin case in which George Zimmerman, who was his killer, was able to be acquitted as a result of that law. So you see these laws that are pretty recent that have had huge negative impacts on Black communities that were supported by nonprofit, you know, political organizations that were backed by these massive corporations. Mm-hmm. And so that's why, again, I say that these companies need to do a lot of self-assessment. You know, even more recently, something like Airbnb, a couple of years ago, that's a company in the travel industry that had huge issues around discrimination. And they went out and they hired Eric Holder, the former attorney general, as their outside consultant to help them with some of their anti-discrimination policies. And now you look at them a couple years later, their executive team still has no African Americans minus the person that leads diversity within the company. So no one really in a position of authority around a business unit. So you look at that and you say, have they really changed? Mm-hmm. You know, so I think that's why we see a lot of this virtue signaling with these companies putting out their statements. But a lot of people, I think, are skeptical of really if that's really meaningful change within the company.
Yeah. Before we take a quick pause, Terry, I'm wondering if you can just describe for us, you know, when it comes to creating social change, who is it up to? Like, thinking of the business world compared to people and then policymakers, what role does everyone play here?
I really do think that consumers played a big role in kind of directing businesses to understand, especially over the past 4 years, how much they care about social issues when it comes to women's rights, immigrants' rights, gun control, and now with Black Lives Matter. I mean, Black Lives Matter has always been an issue, but since 2014 with Ferguson, I can't think of a brand that actively spoke about that.
Yeah.
And so I do feel like the business world is in a way responding to consumers' needs, but I do think it's very important for them to reassess their role in this. If they're truly making so many of these statements, are they looking internally at their employees, at management, to really make the structural change that they're calling for?
Well, from banning players from kneeling in protest to publicly declaring we were wrong.
We, the National Football League, condemn racism and the systematic oppression of Black people.
We'll talk about the week's most dramatic corporate about-face with Localer founder Joa Spearman, law professor Marissa Baradaran, and Vox reporter Terry Nguyen. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. You're listening to 1A from WAMU and NPR. Stay with us. Do you talk about the news with your friends, your family, or perfect strangers? Get the facts you need to be up to speed on this busy news cycle on the 1A News Roundup. Find the podcast in your feed every Friday.
You may have noticed something at all these protests over police violence. There are a lot more white people there than you'd expect. But how long will that last?
this awakening among white American voters? How far are they really willing to go beyond dethroning Trump?
Adam Serwer on race and lessons from history. Listen and subscribe to It's Been a Minute from NPR.
This is 1A. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. It's a moment of corporate consciousness like we've never seen before, at least according to company Twitter feeds. Brands that previously stayed mum on social justice issues are speaking up about race, and they're publicly declaring that Black Lives Matter. Can this so-called virtue signaling become actual virtue? Our guests are tech company founder Joa Spearman, law professor Marissa Baradaran, and Vox reporter Terry Nguyen. And we have a tweet from Jessica. She says, if you don't talk about Ben and Jerry's response, I'll be so disappointed. Jessica, I promise you, we'll get to that. We have someone from the company who is actually going to be joining us later on in the program. Now, there was likely no corporate statement of solidarity as surprising as this one.
We, the National Football League, condemn racism and the systematic oppression of Black people. We, the National Football League, admit we were wrong for not listening to NFL players earlier and encourage all to speak out and peacefully protest. We, the National Football League, believe Black Lives Matter.
That was NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell admitting wrong. Kumara in Pennsylvania left us a message about that.
I think that the NFL and most big corporations are not actually in the fight for equality. How long have Black players been kneeling down, demanding for racial equality, demanding for compensation to be held with regards to the issue of racism? The president used the meeting of Black players as a way to demagogue them. And a lot of these big corporations, especially the NFL, they never say anything about it. In fact, they were punishing players for kneeling down or exercising their constitutional rights.
Thanks for that message, Kumara. Terry, give us a bit more of the backstory here. What happened with the NFL?
Yeah, so a lot of NFL teams, not just the NFL at large, specifically the San Francisco 49ers, posted a black square on Twitter with the hashtag Blackout Tuesday. And I think that, to me, was the most ironic kind of expression of solidarity, especially since the team's former quarterback, Colin Kaepernick, he's so well known for taking a knee and pretty much being ostracized for the next couple of years, despite even being the face of Nike's Emmy-winning campaign. It's just difficult to kind of level what's happening right now with the NFL and these teams saying that they care about Black lives. But just a few years ago, they've shunned this very well-known quarterback from even getting hired.
And to many, Terry, a giant detail was missing from Goodell's statement. There was no actual apology to Colin Kaepernick.
Right, exactly. That's what's so damning about this, because I do think Kaepernick played a huge role in elevating kind of the importance of protests against police brutality, at least among the American public at large. And it's quite frankly shocking that they could say this without apologizing to him, someone who kind of centered the NFL in this larger conversation about race.
Mm-hmm. And he can't take all the credit for this, because the apology also came after some players applied the pressure with a video made by the social media team that, you know, really sort of drilled in on the issue and said, you know, they said things like, you know, it could have been one of us. It could be one of us still. You know, what's it going to take? So it was that pressure that sort of led to this apology video. Professor, I want to get you in here. The chief financial officer of the investment bank Citigroup said he plans to donate to social justice causes, but the Progressive newsletter Popular Information says that Citigroup has already donated nearly $200,000 to members of Congress who have an F rating from the NAACP. So tell us how banks have specifically played a role in perpetuating inequality. There's a long history there.
Oh, there is a long history, but I think banks, corporations, it's not what you do on your social media page or Twitter or even, you know, the statements that you make, you know, in press releases that matters. It's what you do in the backroom lobbies, right? So these banks, these corporations have lobbied directly against the interests of Black and brown communities. And I think this conversation really just highlights the point that we can't rely on corporations to be the leaders in social change. Corporations are going to follow where the market leads. And we as a people, I mean, we are voters. We're not just consumers. And so, yes, we can use our market power to boycott and put pressure. But the problems here are, you know, problems with the police structure, problems with the racial wealth gap. These are policy problems. And it's a failure, quite frankly, of our political system that we have to rely on these very powerful corporations to do the work of social justice. And, you know, the NFL is an example. The NFL is never going to be the leader of change, right? If we want change, we make change and the NFL can follow. And the NFL, the reason why they made this statement is because they were stuck in a bind. You have the vice president saying, oh, don't be violent, do peaceful protests. And people rightly pointing out, look, when we did peaceful protests, when Colin Kaepernick, you know, led the charge in peaceful protest, you all freaked out. And so there is this corporate hypocrisy. But I think, you know, corporations are corporations. They have one function only, to raise shareholder profits, to increase the equity on returns, or the returns on equity. So we, as a people, through our policymakers, through our power of the vote, need to do that social change. And then we tell the corporations what we need from them. And it's backwards right now. We kind of put this market pressure on corporations, and then in the back room, they're the ones with the power. There are 5 financial industry lobbyists for every 1 legislator in Congress. 5. And all of those things, all of that lobbying is in the background. No one's social media is about that, right? That is where all of this money and all of our policy come from. So forget the social media pages. We need to put political pressure on our legislators to reduce the power of these corporations.
Is this new, Terry? You're hearing what the professor's saying. You know, have we seen companies speak out about social issues, social causes before?
Yeah, I would say that companies started speaking out about social and political issues starting around 2016. Last year, I covered how 150 or so CEOs sent a letter to Congress explaining how that they are against, you know, rifles being sold, and how Dick's Sporting Goods and Walmart kind of both have taken a stand against not selling those in their stores. But it is essentially a political push. I do feel like consumers recognize that they have say, they do have power in kind of dictating how these companies should present themselves on these social issues. But presenting themselves versus actually doing the change in the background, as the professor mentioned, is a very different thing.
Joa, what do you think is the motivation, really, of businesses that are speaking up in support of Black Lives Matter? Why are they doing it?
Well, I would say that, thankfully, there are a few companies that truly have a vested interest in the public good of this moment rather than just the financial good. I think Ben & Jerry's, for example, is a company that, you know, they have been a very outspoken, not only about, you know, saying Black Lives Matter, but saying white supremacy, for example, is the source of so many of these issues. And so I think there are some companies that are motivated by the public good and by creating a better, more equal society. But I do think most of the companies that we're seeing and hearing from right now are virtue signaling, because it's very much like a trendy thing to do. It's something that they feel like they can get cool points by posting the square, by aligning themselves with Black consumers who in almost every industry control the way that culture moves around, whether that's music and entertainment, sports, apparel. These are industries where Black culture is such a dominant force. So I think this idea of aligning yourself with this kind of culture that has a lot of financial currency and also, you know, so cultural currency around, you know, what's cool, what's hot, what's trendy. I think there's some value that these companies perceive in aligning themselves there. So I think that what's important right now is that, you know, consumers need to educate themselves on the difference between those two things, because two companies may post a black square, but one may be really invested in the public good and the long-term fight and struggle for the equality that Black people deserve, while another company may be simply virtue signaling so that they can, you know, hit their next quarterly earnings report.
We're talking about how businesses who say they want to see change can actually make that change happen, big or small.
Hi, this is Simon from St. Paul. I'm just calling about the decision as a small business to make a social impact part of your business model. And I think it's incumbent on us small business people to lead in this area. We're not subject to shareholders. We've got the flexibility and we have the moral responsibility.
What do you say to that, Professor? Is it easier for small businesses?
Absolutely. I mean, that's the point of corporate reform is we have an entire corporate economy that is increasingly run by large, powerful industries that don't allow these small businesses to survive, which actually hurt Black and brown businesses in tech, in banking, in housing, in every sector you look at. We have sort of diminished our anti-monopoly laws. And so we have created these massive monopolies. And so these small businesses are not, they're really struggling. They're not thriving. And this, you know, recession that we're in right now is going to, you know, really squeeze the rest of them. And so, you know, I think we want, as a healthy economy, as a economy that is more equitable for all people, to have smaller businesses and smaller businesses doing more more stuff, because then we could get the services to these communities most in need. And that is being fought by these very companies that yeah. are making these social justice statements.
What can be done to just make this more than just this so-called virtue signaling moment? And whose responsibility is it? Is it the company themselves, or us as the people buying their products, or policymakers?
It's our political system. Like, we the people have a system for creating policy, and it has been distorted by money and politics. Citizens United, as was brought up earlier, is one, but there's a lot of other sort of lobbying efforts that go on. And so we can't just feel good by, you know, purchasing from a company that says something good, or, you know, and those things matter, I think, but on the margins. The thing that we have to do is push on our lawmakers, our Congress, our Senate, our the presidential vote to appoint people to these agencies that can break up monopolies, that can push corporations to do the things that we want them to do. If we want Black lives to matter, mm-hmm. we have to reform the police. We have to reform, we have to close a racial wealth gap. We have to do all this stuff. None of that is going to be done by Chase Bank or the NFL. Those are just companies yeah. that have one purpose only.
Mary on Facebook says, I believe it's all about money. They want to show the majority of customers that they are on their side, regardless which way the wind is blowing. They want to say they were on the right side of history, but many are late to the party. Some businesses like Ben and Jerry's were standing up way before it was popular and haven't wavered. We'll talk about that when we return. Marissa Baradaran is a professor of corporate law at the University of California, Irvine, and the author of The Color of Money, Black Banks, and the Racial Wealth Gap. Also, professor, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks so much for having me.
I'm Sasha Ann Simons. More from you and from our guests on how companies can walk the walk when it comes to supporting social causes, not just tweet the tweet. Stay with us.
As protests sweep the nation, the subject of policing is once again being hotly debated.
This week on Throughline, how police forces developed in the North and the South in the 19th century and expanded their power in the 20th century.
Throughline from NPR, the podcast where we go back in time
to understand the present.
Now, it's a moment of reckoning, not just for policymakers, the public and police, but also corporate America. My guests are Joa Spearman, the founder and CEO of the tech company Localer, and Terry Nguyen, reporter at The Goods by Vox, which covers consumer culture. And joining us now from his home in the Adirondacks in New York is Christopher Miller. He works at Ben & Jerry's, and his job title is Global Activism Manager. Hi, Chris. Welcome to 1A.
Hi, Sasha. Great to be here.
Good. Chris, first question. What is your job? I confess, I haven't heard of a global activism manager before. What do you do?
I sort of have a unique role in the corporate world. My background is in policy and advocacy. I've spent time working in the United States Congress. I also led the climate change campaign at Greenpeace for about half a dozen years. So I am not a classically trained marketer. I am not a brand manager. I am a campaigner. And I have this, what I think is one of the best jobs in the world. I get to advance campaigns and work on issues that are rooted in the progressive values of Ben & Jerry's, mm-hmm. but at a for-profit ice cream company versus a nonprofit.
Ben & Jerry's has been coming up a lot in our social mentions. So tell us about this statement that Ben & Jerry's released last week titled, "We Must Dismantle White Supremacy." Can you read a part of it for us, Chris?
Sure. The statement was about five or six paragraphs, but let me focus on this one. The murder of George Floyd was the result of inhumane police brutality that is perpetuated by a culture of white supremacy. What happened to George Floyd was not the result of a bad apple. It was the predictable consequence of a racist and prejudiced system and culture that has treated black bodies as the enemy from the beginning. What happened to George Floyd in Minneapolis is the fruit born of toxic seeds planted on the shores of our country in Jamestown in 1619 when the first enslaved men and women arrived on this continent. Floyd is the latest in a long list of names that stretches back to that time and to those shores. Some of those names we know: Ahmaud Arbery, Breonna Taylor, Oscar Grant, Eric Garner, Trayvon Martin, Michael Brown, Emmett Till, and Martin Luther King Jr. Most we don't.
Why did it resonate this time? I mean, this, we've made it clear, you, this is something that Ben and Jerry's has done on multiple occasions.
You know, I think it's hard to know exactly why it resonated. I believe it resonated so strongly because of the language that we used. I think these are complicated and uncomfortable issues, and our country has never fully grappled with its past, acknowledged it, and reckoned with it. And so I think, you know, where you saw companies whose intentions may have been in the right place, but where companies went wrong is when they try to thread some mushy middle here, which is to express some sense of solidarity and unity, but not willing to identify the root causes of what we have been seeing for 400 years, and that is the systemic structural nature of racism and white supremacy.
Now, only four of the CEOs of America's 500 largest companies are black. Here's what two of them had said publicly in the wake of George Floyd's death.
What the African-American community sees in that videotape is that this African-American man, who could be me or any other African-American man, is being treated as less than human.
From where I sit, you should see color. You should see differences. You should see lots of types of differences. And then you should celebrate those, because you should realize that at the end of the day, we're stronger because of our diversity.
That was Ken Frazier, who runs a pharmaceutical company, and Jide Zeitlin, who runs a luxury goods brand. Terry, how big of a problem is diversity in the business world?
It's a huge, huge problem. And I think that it's unfortunate that, you know, the two black CEOs, the very few black CEOs of these very large corporations, have to speak about it and kind of help or guide other CEOs who are not, who might not be as aware of the importance of having diversity in your organization. This isn't just a Fortune 500 problem. This is a problem also in the media industry as well. And so I do think now consumers are very much aware and demanding to know if these corporations, if they have managers, if they support kind of their black employees to rise through the ranks. I think that is all really important to note, especially if you're the leader of such a high profile company.
Joa, I'm wondering your thoughts on diversity in the business world. How does that play into the conversation that we're having right now?
It plays an entirely huge role. So often what happens with some of these big companies making statements at times like this is that they treat it very much as a marketing or maybe a PR investment. I'm sure even the consultants they're hiring are PR and marketing consultants. Very seldom are they really doing a self-assessment of how many black people do we have in positions of power within this company, controlling budgets, controlling business units, controlling product management, things of that nature. So I think that until we see real positions of leadership being provided to black people, we're not going to see any type of lasting change in the corporate world. I'm in tech, and it's an industry that has longstanding issues with not only the capital side and venture capital being a very traditionally white and Asian male industry, but we're also seeing, you know, in big tech companies, you know, mm-hmm. Facebook, Amazon, a lot of these companies are still very much, they very much look the part of the oil barons of the late 19th century mm-hmm. in a lot of ways. So I think that until we see some real systematic change within these companies, we're not going to see it in the corporate world overall as well.
And Joa, you know, if there's nothing to add, should you feel forced to say something in this conversation right now?
I personally would say no. I think that companies that choose not to say something, I think that they should be prepared to respond to what they're doing. But I think that in a lot of ways, I think that the virtue signaling could be more damaging to a company than a company that maybe they're spending time to figure out what their next step is. Because the problem with the virtue signaling is that now you have future accountability. And so now you're going to get punished on that. So the NFL is obviously a prime example, right? Because they're doing this stuff now and they're getting punished for their past actions.
Yeah.
And so I think that companies that are not making statements right now, I wouldn't say that they are being punished. I would say that they are positioning themselves to show the work that they've done. Mm-hmm. Now, and obviously in the future, if you put out a statement 2 weeks from now, that's too late. So the time to put out a statement is kind of coming to an end pretty soon here. And at some point, you know, weeks from now, months from now, you're going to have to show action and results. So the companies that are choosing to be silent right now, I think that they should just be mindful of the fact that the longer they wait to put out any type of statement, the more that people are going to be looking for action and results.
The window has almost passed. Yeah. Okay. Several of you have reached out to us and you had examples of companies where conscious consumers can spend their money. Doug from Michigan recommends Conscious Clothing. And Randy recommended Patagonia. Question for you, Chris, you know, how consumers, how can they make sure that they're spending their dollars in a way that supports social change? But before I ask that, should consumers care about that, you know, rather than just getting the cheapest price, should they care about supporting social change?
Yeah, consumers should care about the companies that they're supporting and what those companies are doing with their power and with their influence. On the other hand, these are issues and problems that we are not going to shop our way out of. And so the expectation that consumers need to know everything about corporations, many things that corporations, you know, try and keep out of the public spotlight,
yeah,
I think is more than we can expect of folks. And so I think, again, you know, corporations are likely mm-hmm. not going to spur the kind of change we need, but we do need companies willing to both yeah. re-examine how they're operating their businesses and to be a part of solving these problems inside the four walls of their corporations. But that's not enough.
Yeah.
We have to lean in on the kinds of policy solutions and hold our elected leaders accountable yeah. For moving forward on these issues.
Terry, we have just under a minute to go. Back to my original question, what advice do you have for consumers who want to support businesses who walk the walk, so to speak? And consider this tweet from BS Hound. They said, as a white supporter of Black Lives Matter, would it help if I move my money into Black-owned banks? Specific suggestions are welcomed. 30 seconds. Where can consumers go?
Consumers can shop local. They can be mindful of who specific CEOs and businesses they want to support, whether that be Black or people of color owned businesses. And I do think that the choice ultimately is with consumers in figuring out where they want to place their money.
Any suggestions on banks?
I personally don't know any.
Or Joa?
I actually just had a conversation with someone who is thinking about starting a Black wealth and financial institution as a result of this. So I don't think there's an answer right now, but I do think people are actively working on it.
Joa Spearman is the founder and CEO of the tech company Localer. Terry Nguyen covers consumer culture at Vox. And Christopher Miller, he's the global activism manager at Ben & Jerry's. Thank you all so much for being here with us. This conversation was produced by Avery Kleinman and edited by Matthew Simonson. To learn more about them and the rest of the team, you can visit the website at the1a.org. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington, distributed by NPR. Until we meet again, I'm Sasha Ann Simons. Thank you so much for listening. This is 1A.